Soy Power Podcast is a free podcast made possible by the support of our awesome Patreon sponsors. Head to toypowerpodcast.com and see how you can help.
Oh yeah, this is power.
Hello and welcome to Toy Power, the podcast where we talk toys and everything pop culture. I'm Trent and thanks for tuning in today for episode
80.
This week on Toy Power, we round up with the latest news and jump into some financial analysis of the toy companies. With me in the Toy Power studio, we've got Darren.
Hello everyone.
Ben.
G'day, g'day.
And Frank.
Yoi hoi.
Let's hit up some news.
3, 2, 1.
Your music.
So what have you got for me?
I'm Batman.
But she's got a new hat.
Okay, so kicking it off, this is probably sort of old news by the time this episode gets to the air, but Disney and Fox, the deal that has been the source of much talking amongst the community, is now all but confirmed. It has been officially ratified by both the Disney and the Fox boards. Whilst there is some possible red tape as far as industry regulation and stuff, most experts tend to believe it's pretty much all but certain. So, obviously, the big one that people have mentioned with this is X-Men and Deadpool and Fantastic Four returning to Marvel. But I just thought I'd give you a quick rundown on some of the other properties Disney get access to with this. Disney will own Aliens, Predator, Avatar, Planet of the Apes, The X-Files, Always Sunny in Philadelphia, the animation studios behind Ice Age, Family Guy, and the big one, The Simpsons.
It's big, isn't it?
Yeah, so that's everybody's focused on the X-Men and Deadpool, and rightly so, but there's a lot of other stuff that will soon, I believe as of 2019 when it all happens, but will pretty much fall under the Disney umbrella.
And that's James Cameron Avatar as opposed
yes.
to Last Airbender.
Good call. Yes, yeah, that is the blue people, not the benders.
Yeah. Very good.
But that's a hell of a library, though, and yeah. You can just imagine what it's going to mean for the streaming service.
Exactly, exactly right.
Very exciting. 2 weeks ago, we had some interesting stuff come out of the Four Horsemen studio. So they did their own in-house online convention that they dubbed Apocalypticon? Apocalypticon? Apocalypticon?
Yeah,
something like that. And so what they did was they basically streamed live via Facebook and Instagram. They did various giveaways and some new reveals. So one of the big ones was essentially this sort of demon on a fire horse.
Yeah.
Big wings, lots of armor. Looked very Mouth of Sauron to me.
Yes, good call.
From Lord of the Rings. I think it was Eric. He sort of mentioned the fact that there was, coming off this rider, there were some huge shoulder spikes. And he said, you know, those Warhammer miniatures, they're sort of going for that over-the-top aesthetic with some of these designs. So they looked pretty cool. The other thing that they did was they promised a special exclusive for people that placed an order within the first hour. Then they realized that they'd put the wrong price on the all-in set. They forgot to put in the troll. So midway through, they're like, okay, everyone that's ordered the all-in...
Stop.
We're going to have to cancel it, and you're going to have to reorder it so we can get the price right, because it was a $100 price point on the troll, so they obviously couldn't just let that one fly under the radar. Some pretty exciting stuff to come out of the subline that's been titled the Soul Spiller, which is the 6-inch figures. Kauros, which is the cringer-like humanoid cat creature, is getting a release in Soul Spiller, as well as Mylana, Ragnar, Stormforger, Shadow Elf Ranger, Lord Veritas, and the Fury Clan Orc. We're also getting Thalen and Frostbite and the higher price point Ice Troll, which does utilize the standard larger troll buck with a new head and obviously new color scheme. $100, like I said, on the troll and $35 each on the figures. So the pre-order is up. So if you're a Mythic Legions fan and haven't jumped on already, get on there. It's up until September 12. The figures are expected to ship in spring 2019. So, look, they're amazing as usual. So, pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah. Can I just ask with that line, is it, it's it's just a Four Horsemen creation. There's no other lore or something they're pulling from. Is it,
it's purely their own design creation, fun. And yeah, coming up with what I guess they see as a fantasy line.
Mm.
But it encompasses things like vampires as well. So it's pretty broad in terms of the different factions that they have. But yeah, all in-house IP.
Cool.
So pretty cool.
Excellent. All right, on to some Hasbro news in the last week or so, post San Diego Comic-Con. Hasbro appeared at the Unboxing Toy Convention in Mexico as part of what they promised at San Diego. They said, look, we're saving some of our reveals for these other cons, and we got to see some new stuff from Marvel Legends and the Star Wars Black Series. Black Series gave us a Han Solo, as he was seen in the recent film, in his Mimban gear, which is basically the scene where he's in conscripted, basically, and he's fighting on the big mud planet. He's got the armor, and if you actually look at the photos, he's actually got sort of like weathering on his boots and sort of up the legs, which I thought was really cool. Face print technology again. The other one to come out of Star Wars was a Princess Leia in the vintage collection, so we're talking 3 3/4 scale, in her Bosch disguise, as she's when she rescues Han Solo. This is the first figure in that scale to use the face print technology. Have a look at the pictures, see what you think. I can't say it looked especially like Carrie Fisher, but again, you sort of got to think of the scale we're talking about.
You always lose a bit in likeness at that scale.
Exactly, yeah. And the photos were zoomed in. I actually had to look up to say, wait, is this 6 inch or not? Because the scale in the photos is hard to pick. We also got some Marvel Legends reveals. There is a Kree Sentry, which is going to be a Build-A-Figure figure. it's going to come from the most probably a space-themed Captain Marvel wave, given the Kree tie very heavily into her origin story. So expect that guy to come out in 2019. There was also the reveal of the Living Laser, who, for those who don't know, which is probably most people, he's a D-lister kind of Iron Man villain who basically his whole body consists of energy. We also got to see Nighthawk, who's another very old-school character, dates back to the late 60s, and was one of those villains who kind of had a bunch of powers sort of stolen from various other heroes, and he could fly, he had lasers, and he's got some Wolverine claws, and he's super strong. Look, it's the first time any of these figures have been put to plastic, so that's pretty exciting for people sort of hoping to get their obscure favourites in the line. No other news as far as what waves they'll be part of and which Build-A-Figures come with what, so all looking forward to that in 2019.
Just quickly on that, the unboxing convention. Mm. Did anyone see Brian Flynn had posted that Skeletor from a theme park ride?
Yeah.
So it was like a life-size Skeletor as a seat almost, and you would sit in his lap.
What?
But it was just lying there sort of derelict almost, and he posted a photo of it, and I think it was going to be sold some form of, if you're there on the day and you've got a pickup truck. Chuck Skeletor or chuck him in the seat next to you and off you go.
The seat next to you would be the way to go.
Yeah, some stuff that you just would have never known existed and looked sensational to have something like that.
Yeah, because, I mean, obviously in Mexico and that and some other countries in the world, their laws on copyright aren't as forced as other countries, so they get away with a lot more than, say, America does. So seeing a bootleg Skeletor merry-go-round ride seat isn't probably not uncommon for when it was in its peak popularity.
Definitely, right. And there were He-Man ones. We've probably all seen the pictures of the He-Man ones in the past.
Yeah,
very cool.
All right, moving on. Keeping on with the Masters theme, Power of Greyskull by Definitive Films has had a kind of unofficial Netflix announcement for release for the end of August, as this project is actually a Kickstarter-funded project. The creators behind this have sent all their Kickstarter backers a password-protected link to catch the film before it is released on Netflix. As 3 out of 4 of us are backers of this, we can all proudly say that this Power of Grayscale documentary is, and I mean is, every Masters of the Universe fan's dream come true, with a host of special guests including Mark Taylor, William Stout, James Etock, Val Staples, Rudy O'Barrow, The Four Horsemen, Larry Houston, just to name a few. It has been made with an enormous amount of passion and love. I can't say that enough. It is just flawless. It is a very serious in areas that the Toys That Made Us documentary made fun of. It covers all aspects of the Masters of the Universe and Princess of Power brand, vintage toys, filmation, movie, new adventures, so on and so on. It pretty much stops at Super 7, just when they sort of take over. It all captures what each reiteration gave fans and the toys that were made because of them. Lots of interviews with lots of voice actors, as well as the people behind the toy lines as well. So this roughly 100-minute documentary will potentially be seen by all very soon. However, as backers to the Kickstarter project, we also received access to all the deleted scenes and outtakes, which sort of broaden on top of some of the subjects of the documentary. All of these special features options run for over 4 hours, and of the few that I personally watched, they are very, very interesting, including one dedicated to fans around the world and how they share their passion of the Masters of the Universe brand.
Yeah, very good. I think just to touch on a point, there is no making fun. This is a very serious documentary. I mean, it's fun at the same time, don't get me wrong, but they're not making light of it.
They're not forced jokes and not, you know, re-jigging the same word like that bong, is, you know, when the thing that they
did. It's done like you'd expect a documentary where there is no narration. All the content are the people being interviewed talking, which I think this is how I prefer to see a documentary. I don't want to... I love Toys That Made Us for what it does. I think it's in a market and it does build on the profile of toys, which I think is important. But this is the perfect tone to set with a toy documentary, in my opinion.
I could not agree more. For me, what this captured was treating the property with a due reverence and respect that, frankly, for a property that's endured as long as it has, despite being out of the limelight for quite a while and certainly the mainstream, I think there's a lot to be said for how Masters of the Universe has been kept alive, primarily by fans through the years, and I think being made by fans, they really captured that time really, really well. I found it at times an emotional documentary to watch. Maybe that's just because I'm sentimental and incredibly sensitive about these things, but it took me back to a time, you know, I remember what it felt like to be there when this was the biggest thing in the world. So to have that captured and archived on film is beautiful, I think.
And I've got to shout out, like, you know, with the internet, with everything that's going on, and you learn the history, and we've all been fans for a long time, so we know the, you know, ins and outs of what went on. But all what you get to see in the film is going to people's houses and uncovering their prototype artwork and things, like pages upon pages of these huge sheets of paper with this is a prototype for Orko, this is a prototype for, you know,
the cowl
and things, and you know, just all in blue pencil and things, because that's how they used to do it back then before computer and stuff. And it is mind-boggling how much art is still out there, you know,
you've got to remind yourself that the art is older than the project, so you think about the fact that this is the first design for Cowl, this is the first design for Liu Kei, and you think, yeah, well, that cartoon was 1985, so we're talking pre that. That's amazing. And the different iterations I thought for Sorod for the film as well, just amazing that it's still out there, that it's intact. Paper, we all know how paper deteriorates. The years are not kind to paper ever, so I think it's beautiful to see what we saw.
Definitely one of the highlights of the film as well was the background stories on the making of the film and things, like just the art and everything that went behind it, just having Dolph Lundgren talk about it, having the directors and the artists and everything talk about what their involvement in the film. It was just mind-bogglingly awesome. Like, I cannot rate it high enough. And whilst you get a snippet of everything in the actual documentary, the behind-the-scenes stuff is outstanding, and not one I've watched, but it's broken down into maybe 15 or 10 to 15 minute segments, each portion being a different segment and things. And there's a movie one, and that is just mind-boggling. It's just
it's incredible. Absolutely. Movie, there's comic books, and there's like Mattel, and then there's sort of longer cuts of some of the interviews, so there's quite a bit of that. So it's sort of an interesting one. So I think when it airs on Netflix, if it does, I know Definitive Films haven't confirmed that it's coming on Netflix, but there's been a bit of research that might indicate it is coming to Netflix. We're going to get the 1.5 hour or the 1 hour 40 minute cut of it. I believe that there will be some DVDs sold that should theoretically or could contain maybe some of the bonus material, but I know that was sort of almost promised as a Kickstarter bonus.
Exclusive.
So I just wonder how many fans that didn't get in on the Kickstarter are going to be able to access that content. It would be a shame, in a way, if people can't access it, because it is so wonderful. Yeah.
I agree, it is so wonderful. And I'd be, as someone who was a backer, I'd be quite happy for them to release it and share it to the world. I guess, for someone who wants nothing but the best for this property, I'd love people to see as much and experience as much as they want to. And I wouldn't want to see limitations put on it. But also, as a backer, I have to say I feel incredibly proud that I played a small role in seeing this beautiful documentary get made. It was such a good call to get in on this.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. Because they've done a brilliant job. And, yeah, my hat's off to them.
And just one other thing. There's in the special features, one of the documentaries is of a toy collector. So a collector of the Master Universe franchise. And he's, like, got one-of-a-kind Castle Grayskull display unit from a toy store or something, where he said you had to crawl through the drawbridge of Castle Grayskull to get into the area for the toys, and it takes a whole wall. Like, it's enormous. It's this sort of plasticky fiberglass Grayskull piece sitting on his wall. Like, it's outstanding. And I mean, I see a lot of outstanding collectors online that have insane collections, but this guy's one's up them on everything, you know, by having this insane Castle Grayskull. I reckon it's just it's outstanding.
Cool.
Very good. All right, what else is happening? There's been a fair bit of movie and TV news as well.
Yeah, quick bit of TV news. Our own, and I say our as in Australia, Australia's own Ruby Rose has been officially cast to play Kate Kane, aka Batwoman, in the new CW show coming later this year. She's actually going to be part of initially the crossover event that they have around Christmas time, and then whilst it hasn't been officially green lit, it's all but certain it's going to happen. She will spin out into her own show in that whole Berlantiverse, for lack of a better term, that will sort of start in 2019. So I just thought it was great. One, an Australian in that sort of universe is always great to see. And in particular, as we all know, the new 52 version of Batwoman, at least, is a lesbian. And so it was really great to Ruby Rose herself is a lesbian as well. And so it was really great to see that representation where they've cast a member of that LGBT community in that role. I thought that was a smart move.
So. Yeah, and Ruby Rose, few tats as well.
Yep.
And a bit of Ninja Turtle, bit of vintage Ninja Turtle action.
Yeah, she's got a lovely...
Well,
lovely...
The real reason why Frank Allen's so happy to see her. That would have got her the role right there in interviews casting.
She just walked in, yep, you've got the part, you're hired. So, no, fantastic to see. And, she's already been doing interviews with Jimmy Fallon and the like, and is all very, very happy with it.
No, so. Very cool. Very exciting. And that's one that I'll certainly be tuning in for when that one airs, and definitely look at the crossovers. I've heard this.
Anything featuring anyone from the Bat Universe is always a tick in my book. You can't see enough of that.
Well, on that point, it's been confirmed that Batman won't be appearing.
I know, I've heard that.
In what, sorry?
In any of the
Arrowverse or whatever.
Crossovers.
I can see DC just putting their foot down on that, going, nope. Yeah,
and I can understand
he'd
that.
He'd steal the limelight. Yeah. He would.
Yeah,
that's actually not my reason for understanding it. It's incredibly controversial, I know, but I've had a feeling for probably the last 20 or more years that Batman's place now on screen in a live-action form is film, for me. I just feel that the television medium still doesn't get the budgets worthy, I don't think, to elevate a franchise like that in the way I guess I'm used to seeing it being done. You think about an episode of... Even Game of Thrones might be like $15 million an episode, and that sounds like a lot, but when was the last time you thought of a Batman or any superhero movie that might clock in at two and a half hours having a combined budget of, what, $30 million? Good call.
No, but you're right.
For something like that, I just think, you know, it warrants a larger budget, the kind of budget that you can really only do in film.
Yeah. Mm. Very good. All right. At this point, we're going to go into our 2018 half-year roundup. So this is a little snapshot in preparation for the Toy Power Toy Awards at the end of the year. We wanted to put our feelers out and sort of see how we're tracking midway through the year. And we put the call out to fans and listeners of Toy Power to see how figures were ranking in their books. So we've got a bit of feel for how the toys are tracking to 2018.
And then I reckon at the end we'll shout out our own personal things. So I'll start it off and I'll then pass it around the room to... first off, the rank, we have Mr. David Damaged. He voted for the 12-inch Marvel Legends Deadpool figure. I think he was going for the traditional red and black version. I believe the extra zombie head with the propeller hat accessory was the decider for his choice on that one. So well done, Davey. That's a... one that I have in my collection as well, and I was there when he picked that up as well, and I remember he flipped out of the zombie head alone, so what a cool choice, Davey.
Excellent. We've also got some feedback here from John Caulfield. Mythic Legions Adamon.
Yep.
For him, he says it's an especially well-made figure. The paint detail, the sculpting, that scale is just crazy good, and it's kind of hard to argue with him. It's a great-looking figure.
It is, yeah. I got this figure as well and did a video review, so you can... jump on YouTube and find the Toy Power video review of Adamon, along with probably 100 other reviews.
Transforming
that. Yeah, Transforming that. Check it out. But it's a sensational figure. And the thing I was blown away with Adamon, and this probably applies to all of the Four Horsemen Mythic Legions figures, is how tight and seamless the joints are. No peg holes visible. No. Yeah, tightness in the joint... for a $35 US figure, which is probably a little bit above things like Marvel Legends and you know, same price as where Super 7 are doing their classics, it's incredible what they're doing at that price point. So, yeah, true tribute to the work of the Horsemen and their perfectionism, if that's a word. All right, we then move on to Jose Gonzalez, who shouted out the 6-inch Movie Turtles from NECA. These were, unfortunately, a San Diego Comic-Con exclusive for 2018. But Jose, being a San Diego local, was able to attend the convention and pick them up in person. So well done. Absolutely super choice. And that is a very nice figure. We haven't seen them ourselves in person, but from all accounts, they are wonderful.
I'm seeing some of the photo shoots that people are doing with them, and I generally get confused if they're the full 1/4 scale or the because they look that good.
Yeah.
You know, the detail they're able to get at that scale is incredible.
Some of the outdoor shots and the way people recapture scenes
from the movie,
you're not quite sure whether or not you're looking at it still from the film or looking at the toys. You have to take a second look.
Agreed.
And that's just amazing.
I've seen a lot of shots as well with the diorama in the background, and it'll just be simple shot like him holding a pizza box, Donnie or walking up to Mikey or something, holding a pizza box. And then the second photo will be, oh, this is how I created it. And it's like, oh my gosh, that's just the diorama. Like just with a little bit of lighting and things and the right angle and such, it looks outstanding. You wouldn't believe that it's not a real life person in a costume, you know, versus the actual figures. So well done.
Our good friend Chris Wisdom put his vote down for a knockoff figure known as the King of the Magic Rings. The toy itself appeared to be an Obi-Wan dressed doll type figure with a stormtrooper helmet on. And if that wasn't cool enough, it also includes a neat looking barbarian sword. Overall, a great looking bootleg figure. Probably spotted at the flea market or something.
Yeah, well done, Brett. Well done, Chris. Yeah, for sure.
I'd love to see Chris's worst figures list. It might be something like NECA this or Hot Toys that.
That's
his best.
Yeah. We all got a laugh on that one. No, I thought that was cool.
Oh, I think it's great.
All right. Joe Hayes, he locked in two choices. His were the SH Figuarts Ninja Batman as well as the Devil Joker, based on the recent DC animated film titled Batman Ninja. Both very, very cool figures with a crazy amount of detail, accessories, as well as articulation to boot. So good choice, mate.
I'd be curious to see these next to the DC Multiverse ones that are going to come out. Yeah. Just the, you know, comparison on, you know, detailing and size.
It's always interesting to see the comparisons. I suspect Mattel will do pretty well for their price point based on the prototypes, but you know, devil's in the detail. Yeah, production is a different thing to prototype.
This time we got a bit of feedback from JP Latour. Apologies if I got that wrong. He's put a vote in for the Star Wars Black Series Gamorrean Guard that was only just recently released. Very cool figure. Look, I'm not a Star Wars guy, but even seeing that, it's another one of these figures that just sort of leaps off the... looks like he's walked off the set of the movie. So absolutely.
Yeah. No, good call. Cavball Customs from Intergram. Instagram?
Interweb. Instagram.
What's that thing called that's on my phone? Instagram.
From social media platform number 5.
Yeah. He voted for the Mythic Legion's Colosseum wave and shouted out for Ramulus, which was his personal favourite. And again, it's very hard to pass up Mythic Legions for quality.
Casey Hancock voted for Zoids, ZW01 through ZW05. His favourite is Wild Liger.
Cool. JL Collectibles from Instagram. He shouted out the Star Wars Black Series Grand Moff Tarkin.
That's Greenlight Collectibles, is it? That's who they are?
Yes, yeah, I believe Greenlight. Right.
Yeah. Nice. Our good friend Mr. Sam Cripps has voted for Mezco 112, which we know he's a big fan of that line. He can't decide between Old Man Logan or the Punisher. They're two of his favourite characters, apparently, and just to see them in that sort of scale with the quality that Mezco are doing, he could not choose between the two of them.
I know that feeling well, gentlemen. Yeah. Yeah, well, no. Good to see that Sam shows that it's an in-style way to be.
Absolutely.
Damon Sarian, he was pretty impressed with the power of the Prime's leader class Evolution Optimus Prime. How can you go wrong with that? Two figures in one. You've got little
Ryan Pax.
Ryan Pax in the chest there. And I think there's a little bit of a sort of trick where you can get a Ryan Pax out and sort of seal up the chest.
There's been some mods made where if you do it according to the instructions, you leave a gaping hole in what would be Optimus's chest, but there's a couple of little tweaks that you can find online. So you can literally have the full-size Optimus Prime and a Ryan Pax standing next to him. So.
Bam.
And Malcolm Hobbs voted for the Playmates Classics 84 Voltron.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which is an absolutely stunning piece. I don't know if you've seen it.
Mm. I did see it actually at the Big W toy sale.
Yeah, I saw it.
All in the one set?
Yes. Yeah.
The gift packs. They were so good. Very well priced as well. Yeah. A lot cheaper buying it the gift pack way than buying all five lions individually.
I have to admit, I break down. That's one thing I did buy. I don't buy a lot of Voltron these days, but yeah, that just took me back to a moment in time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're up to season 7 on the Netflix now.
Yep.
All right, Jay Peak, he really liked the Super 7 Masters of the Universe figures. Their accuracy to the cartoon is fantastic. His special shout out to Skeletor for capturing his face sculpt. So I believe he was referring to the new Super 7 vintage style ones. Yeah. So well done, Jamie. Thanks for that.
Mm. And lucky last, we've got from Fair Play Things via Instagram, Transformers Power of the Primes, Battle Slash and Road Trap. These are the two figures that actually combine to one's a helicopter, one's a truck or something. And they actually you'd need both of them to complete the bot mode, very much taking after the original figures. I haven't seen them in the flesh, but they do look very, very cool.
Very good. All right, we might go around now and shout out ours, where we're at with some pretty notable toys for 2018 so far. I'm going to have to shout out the Jurassic World Super Colossal T-Rex on this one. Just as a really awesome toy that's widely available and is super nicely sculpted and put together. Great paint apps for the price point. You know, this thing is, what, 3 foot long?
Yeah, he's enormous.
Massive.
Yeah. He's probably as tall, tail to mouth, probably as tall as my daughter, my youngest daughter. So,
and $70 or $69 Australian.
Yep.
It was just insane. So I just have to shout that one out at this point.
Would have been cool if we could have had the battle damage one like Jose's got.
Yeah.
Yeah, that looked awesome. I'm torn, which, you know, is probably not surprising.
Darren not being able to choose?
For long-term listeners of this show, that's probably not that surprising. I'm torn between Grand Moff Tarkin from the Black Series and the San Diego NECA Turtles, even though I haven't received them yet. Every picture seems to indicate that they are just that damn good. Mm. And for that scale, and you know, something we've always dreamed of. I mean, not that the vintage movie star ones are terrible, they're great, but this just takes us down such a screen accuracy path that we would never have imagined would become reality.
Cool. All right, for me, my first initial vote was down for Master Universe Classics Fangor. I was like, that figure alone was so cool. But I'm going to vote for the Super Colossal T-Rex as well, because that sort of I was going to get Fangor regardless. Like, he was always on my wish list. But for me to go out and purchase the dinosaur a separate line that I don't collect, you know, and my kids have just grabbed it and not let me play with it at all. They've, you know, they've thrown Hot Wheels down its mouth and, you know, all their little ponies, anything that'll fit down there. I'll open up the bottom of the thing and there'll be like 20 little toys just spew out of his guts. So the sheer size alone is outstanding. It's pretty much bigger than my dog. So my wife took a photo of the dinosaur like roaring at my dog while he's sitting there, and we made some jokes about that. It's just what a fantastic toy. That's something I probably wouldn't have bought, but I've bought and just been blown away by the quality and everything else. So yeah, that gets mine.
I'm going to have to shout out the MP41 Beast Wars Masterpiece Dinobot. Look, it's not one that I've been able to afford, quite frankly, because I think prior to the announcement of the Megatron Beast Wars, this was the most expensive Masterpiece to date. But again, screen accuracy is just incredible. It's if you know that original CG really well, it's incredible the amount of detail. They've got accessories that relate to a variety of episodes across the run, and you know, he's a very compared to like Megatron, he's a very big bulky figure. He's quite thin, and they've made it work. Those geniuses at Takara, just the sheer design mechanics behind it are staggering to see, and to put it into plastic in such accurate shape, they've done amazingly well. So that's mine.
Very good. All right, well, yeah, certainly shout out if you've got some favorite toys for 2018 thus far. And we will go back as we traditionally do at the end of the year and wrap up 2018.
And can I just say, on a note, it's really nice having to sit here with everyone in the room to hear so many people vote for toys that actually made it to Australian retail in such a mainstream way. Often we talk about the toys that are not getting here, and we're talking about the toys that we do see and the disappointment with them. But to hear that a toy made the list, the top list, and is so widely available, I think, is, including in this country, is just terrific, and it gives me a little bit of hope that maybe there's still some good in Australian retail and some good in, you know, the toy prospects of the future.
Just on that, just to broaden that, unpack that a little bit, I'll go into a store and I'll see Jurassic Park figures on the shelf, Jurassic World figures on the shelf, and I'll be like, awesome, you know. You know, I wonder when wave two or whatever, and my kids will pick one out and might buy it or whatever. And then I'll come back like a week later and it'll be empty. You know, it's that toy line is so popular, it's just going gangbusters at the moment. So, you know, it just shows the quality, it shows the range, it shows the movie franchise. It's just doing really well. And I can, if I miss it out on one store, I can go down the mall to another store and potentially pick up what I'm wanting or looking for somewhere else. So yeah,
that's fantastic, especially when I can remember only a few years ago Trent and I were talking about how disappointing, you know, the Hasbro Jurassic World line was. To hear that, you know, Mattel have turned it around in such a short period of time, fantastic, and hopefully shows that, you know, maybe their future's brighter than people might think.
Speaking of future and how toy companies are performing, that might be a nice segue into our quarter two financial roundup. So we're going to look at three toy companies today: Hasbro, Mattel, and Funko. This is really interesting. I just we had our Patreon chat going around, and we're shooting around a bit of information about Funko and some issues that they were facing. I know they had recently an IPO in, I think, November of 2017. So they're now a listed company. But I also checked out that documentary, Making Fun.
Yep.
And it just gave me a newfound appreciation of, I guess, where Funko came from and their ethos sort of that drives them. And it's all about having fun and that sort of thing. So it'll be really interesting in this segment to contrast Mattel and Hasbro as probably the two biggest toy companies in the world, and then sort of see how something like a specialty niche collectible toy company is doing in terms of Funko. So we'll hopefully be able to contrast some of the numbers for you.
But just on that, it's not niche anymore, though, I don't think, because it's literally true. Anywhere you can buy toys, you can buy Funko products. Like you, and that's when my wife and I used to collect. Completely got out of it when it became super mainstream, and you can walk into almost your local supermarket
Target.
And buy them, you know. At my store, we were clearing some of the Frozen ones for 47 cents. Like, that's how many, that's how much the business had bought, and they couldn't get rid of it. So, yeah, it's an eye-opener. Yeah,
it is. Target Hollywood, my local Target store, they've got, like, an entire aisle devoted to Funko Pops. I noticed that just on Thursday when I was out shopping. It's just massive.
Very good. We'll start off with Hasbro. So there, so this is all, we're talking second quarter results in the US. So the US reports on a December year end, whereas here in Australia we're a June year end. So when you hear second quarter, we're referring to the financial position up to 30 June 2018. So their revenue sat at $904 million US. And basically they had a bit of a downturn in US and Canada revenues. They were down 7%, as well as the international segment revenues were down 11%. Interestingly, for Hasbro, they earn a proportion of their revenue through entertainment and licensing. Mm. That was up 26%, so good to know that they can sort of supplement some of the downturn in sales with that licensing revenue. Their operating profit margin sat at 9.7%. Reported earnings sat at $60.3 million. And basically, they put in their financial statement summary that they had a strengthened brand portfolio with the acquisition of Power Rangers.
Yeah.
So they're sort of counting those chickens a little bit to the market, saying, look what we've got. This is strengthening our brand.
Because that would have cost them millions to buy that license. And so that, because it only happened, you know, months or so ago.
Yeah.
There's, you know, a big outlay of cash, and then they're going, oh, yes, but the future's bright because we have this. So just remains to be seen how it all pans out, I think.
Just on that Power Rangers thing, they've actually announced a second movie.
Yep.
So
yes, exactly right.
I have to admit, I haven't even seen the first one. Has anyone seen it?
Or? Yeah, I've seen it.
Does it hold up or to a non-big fan?
Right. Look, do you know what's really interesting about it is the first half of it, when they're building the characters, is actually really good. There's some good character work in there, and it's like the most recent Godzilla movie where you don't see the big CG stuff till towards the back half of the film. They don't just, you know, you think of the very first Power Rangers show and within 10 minutes they're all in their suits and stuff. It's a nice winding path. However, when they do get into the Zords and they start fighting, it just turns into a big CG slugfest.
Michael Bay.
Pretty much, yep. Exactly. Yep. And that's when you go, oh, that's right, I'm watching a toy commercial.
Yeah.
So there's potential there. I'll be curious to see whether they reboot it or whether they stick with the same cast and where they go.
But good on them, you know.
At this stage in the announcement, but they haven't given any further details on that. But I'd be fascinated too. I haven't seen it in its entirety. I've caught bits and pieces on Foxtel, but I'd like to see it. I don't know a ton about the property, but can figure worse descriptions for a film than it being a toy commercial.
Yeah. It's worth a watch. It just is not going to stick with you for a long time, I don't think.
Yeah, well, very wise. I mean, Hasbro would want another movie right now with this in their brand portfolio. The interesting part of Hasbro is they ended the quarter with $1.2 billion in cash, and they returned $152.8 million of that to their shareholders. They also repurchased some shares back from shareholders. Just a quick quote from Hasbro CEO Brian Goldner. He said, Darren, do you want to run us through the quote? Sorry.
No, that's fine. So Brian Goldner said that the two biggest challenges for Hasbro in the short term are the exit of Toys R Us from the toy industry in many global markets, and also, in addition to that, the changing retail landscape in Europe. And, you know, personally, I think we'd all love to hear from any European fans that might be listening to this podcast and maybe shed some further insights on what those changes like. I noticed that Brian Goldstein didn't elaborate in his, you know, in his statement.
It's evolving. He refers to it as an rapidly evolving European market. I don't know if Brexit has anything to do with that or...
I was wondering about Brexit.
That's a good point.
The other thing that I've been following quite closely is the changing landscape in department stores, particularly in the United Kingdom. And I was wondering if maybe that was sort of happening across Europe, not just the UK. But, you know, I'd be speculating, and I don't want to do that on Twitter. I'd really love to hear from people that actually are on the ground in Europe and actually know what's happening.
Yeah, it'd be great to know. And we'll circle back when we get to Funko, because there's some interesting results around European markets.
Definitely.
So keep that in mind. All right, we'll head on into Mattel. Mattel sat at a net sales of $841 million for their second quarter. So some pretty strong performance. Barbie and Hot Wheels were strong performers as well, with Barbie up gross sales of 12% and Hot Wheels up a massive 21%, even in light of the Toys R Us liquidation. At a net sales level, obviously the decline in overall net sales was driven by the Toys R Us liquidation. The sad news coming out of Mattel was that they announced a staff reduction of 2,200 positions, which represents 22% of their global non-manufacturing workforce. So a pretty significant impact there. They're also looking at moving some manufacturing sites out of Mexico, so shutting down some of their Mexican manufacturing sites. The other thing that probably aligns...
Makes you wonder if that was where Titus and Megator came from.
Yeah, very likely, yeah. Yeah, could be an end of an era there. On the back of those job losses out of Mattel, there is a, I guess, a structural simplification program that is happening. And Mattel have announced to the market they're hoping to deliver $650 million in savings. So that is, I guess, something that businesses might do from time to time to look at their overall process and see where they can trim and make some efficiency improvements. They've had strong working capital performance, led by some improved inventory management work that they've done. But just to look at it, I guess it's not unexpected to see that for the second quarter, net sales were down 14% and gross sales were down 11%. They reported an overall operating loss of $189 million and a net adjusted operating loss of $141 million. So probably tougher times for Mattel when you sort of contrast to where Hasbro were.
Yeah,
definitely.
And I think there, and look, there may have been job losses at Hasbro, but not that I've seen any reports of. So,
not at that scale.
Not at that scale, correct. And you know, the money, you know, here nor there, but job losses is always a bad sign, no matter what sort of company you're working for. So, yeah, look, I kind of figured in this post Toys R Us era, there was always going to be a sort of a general downturn, and that, what did we say, it was like 14% sort of overall. That's probably about par, I would say. The job losses is concerning, but you know, he's hoping they can bounce back from that.
I think the problem for Mattel is that they've been making. Losses for a number of years now. That it hasn't started with the demise of Toys R Us at all. It's sort of, that's made a bad situation that little bit worse, but it didn't initiate there. Whereas Hasbro have been able to take it in their stride to some degree, because they were a company that was doing well prior to Toys R Us. So, but you know, there's always hope. You know, the Jurassic World figures, people seem to be loving those toys, and what we saw at San Diego, I think that could be an IP that could do well for Mattel.
All right, let's have a look at Funko now. Funko had their IPO last year, and it was a shaky start from what I read today with the Funko IPO. I think it was sitting around $12 per share, and it's only just now gotten back up above that value. I think it dropped to about halved in value shortly after the IPO itself, I think making it one of the less successful IPOs in US history, but it seems to be back on track now. But Funko were really good performers. Interestingly, we often joke about this on Toy Power, but they've been really active in their licensing. So now they have 510 active licensed properties that they have on the go.
Wow.
Up 26% from 404 last quarter, which is just insane.
When you say
mind-boggling.
When you say active, does that mean like, okay, we've done, you know, 4 Golden Girls figures, and like, does that count as an active?
I'd say that would be active.
So yeah. I think they've retired the Thundercats pop vinyl, so to speak.
They
so
wouldn't be active anymore.
No, so but they've kept the license for Masters, but they've decided, nah, Thundercats did okay. We got the main characters out there. We don't foresee Tigra and things selling much. We're just going to shut down that license, and we'll move our money elsewhere and produce something else.
Here's the big one. Net sales in the US grew by 33%, up to 97.1 million, while overseas net sales are up 32% to 41.6 million. Interestingly, that growth in the overseas market was primarily driven by Europe. Okay, so good things are happening for adult collectors in Europe. Funko's gross margin was increased to 38.2%. And basically, they attributed this gross margin increase to higher product margins in Europe. So they're making more money in Europe at the margin level than they are in the US. As well as what they did, they had a strategy here to acquire a company called Underground Toys, which was acquired in the second quarter of 2017. That, I think, has enabled them to get into those markets a lot more seamlessly, so with distribution networks and the like. So they're performing really well in Europe.
So what's your analysis of that?
Well, what is the problem? The problem is Funko. That's the problem Hasbro has.
Hasbro has the great problem that Marvel Legends collectors in Europe have exited that and bought Marvel Funkos.
Yeah.
Funko Pops.
Well, I don't know.
Sucked their money into that and they've ditched Black Series and sucked their money into Funko Pops.
Well, I reckon of all the longevity that Marvel Legends have had and how many figures they've put out, Funko have already beaten that by three by how many Marvel figures they've put out in their Funko line. So.
And I'm teasing, obviously, because you know, they're two very different products pitched at very different customers and very different demographics. But it's fascinating to see the patchwork of it, you know, of the toy economy working in such stark difference.
Mm.
Between those two manufacturers.
Yeah, the Funko history was really interesting, and Ben, I know you've seen the documentary, but Funko got into a concept of trying to get cheap licenses. They started off with these cheap licenses, and people just ate that stuff up because no one else was doing it.
Yeah.
And I think
it becomes
when
a monopoly, doesn't it, when no one else has ever pursued the license.
You want a Betty Boo doll, you know, you go to Funko and get your Betty Boo bobblehead, and all the mascots, they were doing all these 1950s mascots, you know, Frosty from Kellogg's or
Big Boy,
all that sort of thing. And then I guess that was sort of under the first CEO that they had. And the second CEO, when the first guy sold his business on in sort of around that 2005 point, that new CEO, Brian Mariotti, he wanted to do Star Wars, he wanted to do Marvel and all the big licensed properties. So he's really driven it forward, and he was almost the creator of the pop. They moved away from bobbleheads, but what they managed to do was just tailor to fans. These were passionate collectors themselves that were just wanting to do figures that they liked and they didn't have access to. And I think that was something really special to come out of that documentary, is just to see the fan following and love. Like there was a point where basically the original founder was getting these fan letters in. And he was saying, oh, you know, I've got a box of prototypes there. They might just go in the bin. I'm going to send them out to this guy for writing me a nice letter. And that was the creation of this thing called the Box of Fun. Like, just send that out. There you go. Have a free box of prototypes. And they just do all this sort of fun stuff.
Yeah.
And I think we've talked a lot about the decline in fun. You know, a lot of big corporates have taken over and, you know, all the nice...
They've slipped away from some of the things that we remember from our childhood. Yeah. Like the Lego exhibitions, the Lego World Expos, that people might know them as. The Meyer in Australia had the Master Universe exhibition that Mattel put on, that toured, that was, I guess, the launch pad for the Australian Commander M Club. Those sort of things have sort of declined. The stage shows, fan clubs, all of that. Competitions that they used to run have all sort of exited. But it's interesting to see that the smaller players are trying to bring that back.
Well, I think to that point, you know, the accountants would maybe say, well, is there much value in putting on these big presentations? Funko did it. They would run days where they would dress up as scientists and sell products, and they had all these fans sitting in front of desks with boxes of cereal, eating cereal as they presented. You know, where's the return? The return in that is through the growth of the brand and the business and
absolutely
the fan loyalty. You can't put a price on brand. That is just so valuable. Yet,
as a child, I won some toys in prize draws. I was talking about it at home today. Master of the Universe, Transformers, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I'll tell you something. When you get something for free like that in the mail that you were never expecting in a gazillion years, you don't just study the toy more forensically than if you bought it. You study the back
the card, the collect them all, and all the other figures in the wave, and you think, well, I've already got that one. I've won this one. I won that one. I need to get that one. I need to get that one. I need to get that one. And it washes over, and that, to me, is the value that's sort of lost in that era. But Funko can obviously set.
Just a quick quote here from Brian Mariotti. The strong top-line momentum we experienced at the start of the year carried into the second quarter, and we saw further growth in our product portfolio, in our geographic footprint, and in our profitability. We also continue to see a robust demand around the world for our products, which feature a diverse mix of evergreen and newly released content that appeals to a wide consumer audience. So it doesn't, I mean, we've often said that the bubble has to burst at some point. But clearly, from a sales point of view, they're performing.
Well, you got to, but let's just unpack that a little bit. So yes, you can buy 100 different versions of Iron Man. You can go out and get Legends, Hot Toys, statues, you name it, you can buy it, right? But let's say, you know, David Hasselhoff in kit from Knight Rider. You know, Funko Pops have got that. Who else is doing that? No one. You know, let's talk about Golden Girls. Not my passionate Galoob Golden Girls. Funko haven't touched that line yet, unfortunately.
But NECA have cornered the market on
that. Yeah, but, you know, previous to this year, you know, Funko Pops had done that. You know, Ace Ventura from, you know, Ace Ventura. Like, they'd done that. You know, some of the horror lines and stuff. Like, you know, Funko Pops have done that. It just... You know, and the list goes on. It's those niche lines, you know, having all the Disney princesses and things all lined up, all same scale, all same everything. You know, you're not talking about, you know, different, great. Oh, look, they've released this character from Frozen, but, you know, it's a 12-inch tall doll, like, you know, Barbie doll style. You know, Funko have released all these figures, Aladdin and you name it, everything. And it's got people not just, you know, because... Action figures I see as a very male-dominated, you know, adversary, toy line collectors. But, you know, I reckon Funko Pops and Funko themselves, what's the word for it, entertain the collectors of females just as much as they entertain the
very,
collectors.
Very true on that point. I think they noticed, they said that going in before Funko Pops, they were predominantly adult males. Yep. Then once the Funko Pop design was released to the market, not only did adult female collectors come in at about 50%, kids also came in. Children were buying these sort of things. Like you said, the Disney princesses, that might be a way to collect. So fascinating. They seem to, they talk about basically capturing cuteness in its essence with that design. They've sort of captured a look that people identify with and enjoy that look, and they're just rolling it out. So... I don't know. It sounds like it's performing. I see a lot of stock on shelves.
Oh, and the saturation of it everywhere. You cannot go. You can go anywhere and buy Funko Pops. That's the, you know, there's no. It's not too hard to go anywhere and find it. It's very
true.
It's so.
But there is a message there.
Even, you know, Smoke Mart and gift box and places.
Exactly.
There is a message there, and I sort of have a bit of a go at Mattel for shutting down Matty Collector and pulling out of He-Man Master of the Universe and giving the license off to Super 7. I know it's a revenue stream and that might be all they're interested in doing, but here you've got a company pulling in over $100 million in a quarter. Like, the big two are pulling in, you know, close to a billion, sure, but that, you know, this is snipping at the heels, showing that there is a market if you cater to collectors.
Yeah, the niche, absolutely.
It's big. And I'm just surprised that Mattel, in particular, have thumbed their nose up in the past at the collector and haven't embraced this. You know, the shutting down of Matty Collector seemed like a really odd move, now knowing what's happening in this space.
Mattel are an interesting one, I think. They make a fascinating case study, and we might do that one day in more detail. But if you think about the history of Matty in relation to trialing what people thought of the He-Man prototype at San Diego in 2008, that was completely fan-driven as to whether or not that figure was even released, and it was offered. And I know Trent's talked about
the idea of sublicensing it off now to Super 7 after a number of years as a revenue stream, but I still think that's more progressive than Mattel were a decade ago when they said no to NECA for producing figures based on the 2002 line. I think they've come a long way from where they were.
Just on that before we wrap up, that's another thing Funko, I think, have done really well. Like, you know, previously, Master of the Universe, unless you were new about it and you were jumping onto Matty Collector and ordering it online, you didn't really have access to buy anything Masters at retail. And that's where Funko just jumped into that little open, you know, spot.
That space,
and released a line of Funko Pop vinyls. And then, you know, nostalgic people were walking in, oh, look, there's He-Man and there's Skeletor. I remember having them as a kid. Oh, I'm gonna grab them. Whereas they probably didn't even know, didn't care for buying a $35 figure online and having to get up at, you know, 4 a.m. to have a 7-second window to get on it, yeah, to buy it. And by then, potentially as well, it was the, you know, the D-tier characters that they'd probably missed out on He-Man and Skeletor, you know.
In a nutshell, Funko are collectibles for people who don't collect. And when you break it down, like, there's we've just spoken about there's a really big sort of female presence and stuff, and I can speak to one of the ladies I work with, and she loves her Buffy the Vampire Slayer, she loves the Vikings, Game of Thrones, all that sort of stuff, and she's got on her desk, she's got about half a dozen of these characters all in the Funko Pop style. And, you know, when I saw that, I was like, oh, do you collect? And she's like, no, I just like these. And that was it. And then we spoke about how they're all a consistent size and scale and the same sort of format. And that's it. And Funko have got their money from this person who is not a collector in the same way that we are. Mm. So it's,
but I love how they've sort of reached out and offered something to the mainstream.
Absolutely. I think it's a smart move.
And that may not be what I go for, and we've talked about that before, but hey, look, you know, they're reaching out to people and they're showing people toys can be cool, and art is a subjective thing. Tons of people obviously see something in the pop vinyls that speaks to them, and that's terrific.
Mm. Very good. On that note, we will wrap this episode of Toy Power. We'd like to say thank you for tuning in. We have enjoyed your company. Shout out on Facebook, Instagram, or wherever you can find us. Special big thank you to our Patreons, John Caulfield, a.k.a. Lux Toy Collector, Jose Gonzalez, Chris Wisdom, Brett G, and Joe Hayes. Thank you very much for getting on board, Joe. On that note, we will say a huge see you later, and we'll catch you around the toy aisles.
Thank you very much, one and all, and until next time, good journey!
You can find the Toy Power team at all the usual online places. Facebook.com/ToyPowerPodcast, at Toy Power Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram, or have your say and email us, ToyPowerPodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show on both iTunes and Stitcher, and please leave us a review. Otherwise, we just assume we're awesome.
We are a proud member of the Giant Size Team Up Network. Check out all the awesome shows on this awesome network full of okay people. Want to learn more? Go to GiantSizeTeamUp.com, where you can find us and a whole lot more awesome shows. Well, they're not more awesome than us, but yeah.